the Diocese of Churches for the Sake of Others, is pleased to present the C4SO podcast, a place to celebrate the voices and values of C4SO, a diocese of the Anglican Church in North America, led by Bishop Todd Hunter. You can learn more about us at c4so.org.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the C4SO podcast. I'm your host, Ben Sternke, and today we are talking about C4SO's new diaspora network, whose mission it is to encourage and mobilize immigrant churches and leaders. They bring together immigrant and diaspora communities across North America for resourcing, fellowship, and mission. And we've got three guests today to talk with us about this network. First guest is Dr. Samuel Obi. He is the co-founder and interim leader in charge of Igbo Anglican Church in San Jose as they search for a new rector. He's also a professor at San Jose State University, where he has taught for 33 years. Samuel, welcome to the C4SO podcast. All right. Misael Galdamez is a member of Church of the Resurrection in Los Angeles, California, and currently is a research analyst for the Latino Policy and Politics Institute at UCLA. He is also a second-generation and Salvadorian American. Misael, welcome to the C4SO podcast.
Good morning. Good to be here.
Yes. And finally, we have the Reverend Jonathan Kinberg. He was born in Peru and spent his childhood in Chile, Panama, and Kentucky. He served for 12-plus years in the Chicago area, leading and helping start Latino Anglican churches before joining C4SO and moving to Austin, Texas in December of 2021. He is now based at Church of the Cross in Austin as he helps to start the C4SO Diaspora Network. And he also works part-time for World Relief, bringing together Austin area churches who are partnering with immigrants and refugees. Jonathan, welcome to the C4SO podcast.
Thanks, Ben. Great to be here.
Yes, it's wonderful to have you all with us. And I'm looking forward to this conversation, kind of introducing our listeners to the network, to the Diaspora Network. Maybe we can just start with Dr. Obi, though. Samuel, can you tell us a bit more about Igbo Anglican Church and its history?
Igbo Anglican Church has existed now for almost 8 years. In fact, next month, we'll be celebrating our 8th anniversary of the Igbo Anglican Church in San Jose. It started, the planning started in August of 2014, when I was contacted by an area minister of an Anglican church who had also been contacted by a minister from Nigeria who was looking around for fellow Nigerians, especially the Igbo people, who could help him to start the Igbo Anglican Church. So I received a call in my office from this priest, and that's where it all started. I was able to help him, give him some ideas, put a flyer together, invited him to a Nigerian event in the San Francisco area, and started making announcements, putting flyers on people's cars to let them know what is going on. We quickly put together a small committee of acquaintances with an Anglican background, people from Nigeria. And that's how it started. With the help of the American priest, we were able to form a committee and started planning about our first church service of Igbo people. And on October 12, 2014, history was made in the city of San Jose when 51 Nigerians and their children gathered together and had the first Igbo Anglican service ever in the city of San Jose, I mean of the wow. Anglican background. And since then, we have never really missed any service. We meet only once every month. And through thick and thin, we have managed to survive all those years to the point now where we are looking for a new rector.
Great. Well, you know, the church is called Igbo Anglican Church, and the majority of Nigerians in C4SR are Igbo. I wonder if you could tell us a little bit more about Igbo culture and language.
I was born in Nigeria and grew up in that culture of Igbo. That's our original language. English is our second language. When the missionaries came to Nigeria, through its history, I don't know how much of the history of Nigeria that you knew, but they came and worked hand in hand with the administrators who were sent in those days through the British colonialism and to some extent American and other countries too. The missionaries were working shoulder to shoulder with these guys. And over the years, they were able to make a lot of converts and established many churches all over Africa. And my own area, which is Eastern Nigeria, was no exception. And I grew up attending the Anglican established schools, Anglican church, most of it in the vernacular language called Igbo, all embedded with the Igbo culture and language. So we learned a lot of Anglicanism in Igbo culture. Although today, much of it is done in English, as you can see from some of us who are in America here. And we grew up with that, went through high school and so forth, and eventually came to America. The problem was that in America, in my days, when I first got here, there were no Anglican churches here. And many Nigerians who immigrated here found that problem. It was a real problem. It was not a very difficult thing for people of Catholicism, because there were Catholic churches here already. But for us, it was a big issue. So many of us went to Episcopal. Some went to Pentecostal and all the different churches. And that's one of the problems we're having today, trying to bring all those people back, because they're already established in those other churches. So some of us who still trust and hold in our culture want to impart that to our children. And that's really one of the efforts we are trying to do here, not just to expose them to our language and culture, but also to expose them to that aspect of worshiping God, that God can be found in most of these denominations we have, and Anglicanism is one of them.
Very good. I appreciate you sharing about that. We'll maybe loop back around to you to ask how we can pray for your church at the end of the podcast. But let's move on to Misael. Tell us a little bit about growing up in a Latino immigrant church.
Yeah, so just for a bit of context, I was born and raised in Southern California. Mm-hmm. My mom is Mexican, my dad's Salvadoran. And for, you know, a lot of my life as a kid, my dad was a church planter. So I felt like I'm really closely tied to some of these churches. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, and I also feel like I have somewhat of a mixed experience, because at a certain point, my dad stopped being a church planter and he was a teacher. And so then we started going to like, American churches, which were English speaking congregations. And so my experience growing up in Spanish speaking churches, I feel like the things that I remember most are like this experience of the Bible. In particular, I don't know if I'm sure you've heard of like the kids program Awana, like memorizing Bible verses and those kinds of things. That I feel like is one of my very formative experiences within the Spanish speaking church, that really doesn't feel that unique to that congregation or people of itself. But there's also this aspect there, in addition to learning the Bible, of friendship that I had with other kids who were like me, of kids who spoke both Spanish and English, whose parents mostly spoke Spanish at home, but together we spoke English, right? So there's kind of this like duality of being from both places.
Yeah.
And I think wrapped up in that was like this sense of belonging, of feeling like I belong to other people, feeling like, you know, other, like feeling represented among other people's parents, that when we started going to American churches or English-speaking churches, actually really disappeared. And actually for like, you know, kids, youth groups, I never really felt like I belonged at other churches that we were at that were majority culture. I always felt like there was something different about me that I just couldn't quite relate to others. And so, you know, as I look back, those first 12 years of my church life, I felt were really marked by the sense of belonging of the Bible and of being together with other kids who were like me. But then once we started going to these other churches, there's this feeling of like, oh, I'm not like everybody else. Something is different about me.
Yeah. Wow. What gifts do you feel that what gifts do you feel that the Latino immigrant church kind of brings to the church as a whole, kind of coming out of that experience that you had?
Yeah. And when I think about this question, you know, my dad has since become a pastor again. He most recently pastored a church in Texas. And I'm thinking specifically of that church, which was like a Spanish speaking congregation. He was there for about 7 years. And it was kind of interesting to go from being in Spanish speaking churches as a child, mostly American churches as an adult. And then now my dad's pastoring a Spanish speaking church. It like came full circle in a way. And so I think of a few things. The first is joy. And I don't think this is unlike other diaspora communities. When Professor Obi was speaking, you know, about the Igbo church, I thought about the experience of like Igbo worship that we had at our diaspora prayer day a few weeks back. And it was so full of joy, even through Zoom. And so that's the same thing that I think Latino diaspora brings, is this joy, this beauty in worshiping God together. We're not a very serious people. We don't tend to be very stern, but we tend to be very joyful together. The second thing is a sense of community. I think because we are made up of people who are from somewhere else, we understand the importance of welcoming the stranger or welcoming others. You know, at this church that I'm thinking of where my dad was a pastor, there were people who didn't speak Spanish fluently, who were from the broader, quote, American church, who felt more welcomed within the Spanish-speaking congregation and actually became like a pivotal part of the Spanish-speaking congregation and were on the worship team because they felt more welcome there. And that's really interesting to think about when you consider that there wasn't a common language in between them, like a very strong one. And so I think about that sense of community, that sense of welcome that's rooted both in being from somewhere else and rooted in who God has been for us. And of course, that community never comes without food. I think food is like a big, big experience of the Latino church. There are hardly ever church meetings in which there's not food. If you're staying after church, there is likely food. And that's kind of this part of you know, building community together. And the last thing I'll say is this sense of mestizaje, or this sense of being a mixed state. I think as Latinos, there's like this inherent sense that we understand the tension that exists in the world, that there's like this goal that we're striving for, which is living up to the Christian life and what Jesus has done for us. But there's also like the long way that we have to go till we get there, and we kind of walk in the gray. And I think part of that comes from us just by virtue of who we are, right? Latinos come out of the Spanish conquest of indigenous peoples in Latin America. And so we're both, quote, to speak, you know, oppressor and oppressed. We have that both in us. A lot of us grew up in mixed status families. And so not everybody has formal documentation necessarily to be in this country. And so, you know, in that sense, you're also familiar with the gray area of like towing the line between, you know, the law, what's legal and what's not. And so there's this idea of being able to live in tensions of life because it's just what we know and what we've done. And I think Justo Gonzalez talks about this in his book Mañana, if that's something you're interested in.
The book is called Mañana?
Yeah, okay. By Justo Gonzalez. Okay. He's like a Cuban Methodist
historian, right?
Yeah, he
does a lot of church history.
Yeah, he does a lot of church history.
Yeah, that's great. Maybe even let's double click on the experience of being like a second generation, from, because you grew up, as you said in your story, you grew up here in the U.S. to first generation immigrant parents. And so I'm wondering what, from your perspective, are the unique vantage points and gifts that a second generation brings to C4SO, to our diocese as a whole?
Yeah. So there's this phrase in Spanish that I think some of us have come to identify with, which is ni de aquí, ni de allá, which means I'm not from here and I'm not from there. Hmm. Other people like to rephrase it as soy de aquí y de allá, which means I'm from here and I'm from there. but what they both imply is kind of this sense of we exist in both cultures and we understand them both fluently. Hmm. And so there's kind of this intimate knowledge of both sides of what it means to be Latino, what it means to grow up in Latin America, of what that implies for your culture and how mm-hmm. you treat other people. While at the same time understanding how the United States works, knowing how to process, go through formal stuff here, knowing yeah. how people live here and interact here. So there's that dual fluency. And that's something I actually think is useful for church planting and for the mission of the church. Mm. You know, if we think about the Apostle Paul, in a way, he was kind of a mestizo, right? Because he calls himself a Jew of Jews. And then at the same time, he's a Roman citizen.
Right.
So he both understands like very like fluently, what does it mean to be a Jew? What does it mean yeah. to have lived under the law? What does yeah. it mean to be a part of that community? And then at the same time, what does it mean to be a Roman citizen,
yeah.
to live as under those laws, to live under that empire?
Yeah.
And so because of that, he's able to go across the world and plant a lot of churches across the Roman Empire. And so similarly, I feel like because of that cultural fluency, you know, and I'm speaking about Latinos, but any second generation diaspora will be fluent in two cultures. And so that's really an asset if we're willing to see it that way.
Yeah.
There's this kind of bridge building, right? Like
yeah.
you can go between both worlds and also yeah. translate each to the other.
Mm. Yeah.
Which Misael is even doing right now. He's yeah. translating from Spanish into English
yeah,
or
yeah, yeah.
translating the Latino experience yeah, to the broader
that's
context.
Beautiful. A side note too, like for our listeners who might not be familiar, what's a mestizo?
Mestizo is, I think it was like the formal designation given to people who are mixed European and yeah. indigenous race. You know, it's come to like symbolize this mixture of things.
Mm-hmm. So if I say mestizaje,
it means yeah. like this mixing of things.
Yeah.
That's very kind of unclear and muddled.
Okay.
Great. Because you can't really define like how European are you and how indigenous are you. You kind of just are both.
Yeah. Yeah. That's great.
And then to your question, there's one more thing I wanted to add. Mm-hmm. And this kind of goes back, you know, goes back to what I was saying about the Latino immigrant church. And I think that's the idea of welcoming the stranger. You know, yeah. I think for me, for instance, because of my experience not fitting in to youth groups when I was a kid, I'm going to be more likely and more apt to look for those people who don't feel like they fit in
yeah.
in the group that I'm in. That's more, I think, more particular being second generation necessarily than just Latino. I think there's this experience we have as diaspora, as children of immigrants, mm-hmm. Of looking for other people who are like us in that sense. All of us have friends who are, you know, say, you know, Igbo or Nigerian diaspora or Korean diaspora or Vietnamese diaspora. And so there's this like camaraderie that emerges from that as well. But also this knowing how to welcome somebody who's not quite like you.
Yeah, that's brilliant. That's really interesting. I want to come back and ask you just in a little bit about some of the trends that you are noticing because you work with this policy institute. But we keep using this word. I think we should probably define it for people who might not be familiar with it. But maybe, Jonathan, you can kind of give us a crack at this. But what does the term diaspora refer to?
Yeah, using the definition that Lausanne uses, Lausanne, the kind of global church network, is mm-hmm. one of the places that we're learning from and looking to. They use the word diaspora to refer to anyone that has relocated from their land of birth for any reason.
Okay.
And so it can be any category of immigrant, refugee, mm-hmm. international student, someone who's relocated for business, basically anyone who's relocated from their land of birth. And I mean, biblically, you think about it, there in the New Testament, there's three usages of the word diaspora, which means basically dispersion. You see it in James 1:1, 1 Peter 1:1. Both of those is to the church in diaspora or written to the church in dispersion. And you also see it in John 7:35, talking about Jewish Christians living outside Palestine. So in kind of outside of Christian circles, or in just kind of a sociological sense, it's used to describe any cultural group that has been dispersed throughout the world. And okay. so, you know, we've talked about today the Igbo or the Nigerian diaspora, mm-hmm. the Latino diaspora, which encompasses many different countries from Latin America. You talk mm-hmm. about the Indian diaspora, Chinese diaspora and so forth.
Okay. Give us some of, like, how did you end up working with these communities? Give us some of your background and experience as it relates to ministering within diaspora communities.
Yeah, I grew up in Latin America. I grew up speaking Spanish in school and English at home and living between those two realities. And in my college years, I spent all my summers in the Middle East working with Palestinian refugees and learning Arabic, thinking I would spend the rest of my life in the Middle East. But working with Palestinians is just a diaspora group also kind of throughout the Middle East and around the world. This kind of stateless, landless people, I started kind of thinking more about what it means to be a refugee, what is the connection to land and to people. And then I came back to the U.S. and when I was in grad school, I moved into this immigrant refugee apartment complex in the suburbs of Chicago. And part of the idea was to keep working on my Arabic. There were some Sudanese refugees that lived there. But what ended up happening was just connecting really with refugees and immigrants from around the world and mostly Spanish speakers. About half of the apartment complex were Mexican immigrants. And we essentially planted a church there in my apartment. And some of the first services we had were trilingual. We had Spanish, English, and at that point, Kirundi. There were Burundian and Rwandan refugees.
Okay.
And it was this crazy, very disorganized but beautiful mix of cultures and languages. And out of that ended up coming a primarily Spanish-speaking church. But that was kind of my intro to working with diaspora communities in the U.S. and been doing that ever since.
It seems like it's stuck for you. Yeah. Misael, maybe coming back to you, what are some of the diaspora trends that you've studied and observed as you work with the Latino Policy Institute? Like, give us a picture of what's happening there.
Yeah. I work at the Latino Policy and Politics Institute at UCLA, so I'll probably focus mostly on Latinos. Mm-hmm. And I also want to caveat this with saying that one of the realms of analysis in public policy that often gets missed is religion. We talk a lot about voters, for instance, in my organization, but we don't often look at them through the lens of their faith. Yeah. So that definitely comes from a bit of outside knowledge. But I think the thing that's most relevant for the diaspora network and what we're talking about is the growth of a multi-ethnic population in the United States. If I focus on Latinos, as of the last census, 2020, roughly 18% of the U.S. was Latino or Hispanic. So about 1 in 5. By 2050, that's expected to be about 30%. So 1 in 3. So roughly a third of every person that you meet in the United States will be someone descended from an immigrant from Latin America, which is pretty wild to think about.
Yeah.
And the U.S. is already becoming very multi-ethnic. Mm-hmm. If we look at the youngest generation that's under 16, they're already majority non-white. They're majority different racial groups, be it black, white, or black, Latino or Hispanic, Asian American, or a mixture of those. And so there's already this trend that young people are increasingly diverse and that the future of the country is increasingly diverse. On the church side, I think if anybody's interested in this, Axios Latino sent out a newsletter a few weeks ago that detailed some of these trends about Latinos and their faith. But, I think historically people think of Latinos and they think of them as Catholic. Mm-hmm. But the reality is that it's expected that by 2030, half of Latinos will be Protestant, which is a growth from 25% today. So it's essentially expected to double over 10 years.
Yeah.
And in addition to that, most of those converts are leaving Catholicism and are being converted by other Latinos. And so it's kind of this native work that's happening to Latinos who are leaving the Catholic faith that they grew up with and coming into the Protestant tradition. So if we put this all together, right, you have this situation that ought to be kind of ripe for someone with the eyes to see it or for a group that's willing to make the investments because Latinos are going to be in a big sense, part, the future of this country. A big part of it. And a bunch are leaving Catholicism for Protestantism, right? And so Anglicanism is, you know, historically called the via media, or the middle way between Catholicism and Protestantism. And one of the big reasons I think that Latinos leave the Catholic Church for Protestant churches is because of a lack of serious Bible teaching. You know, as I mentioned earlier, Latinos are really hungry for the Bible and for the word and for scriptures and learning about them and increasing in knowledge. And so, you know, the via media, Anglicanism as a way, is attractive in the sense that it has both this liturgy and component from their previous faith. So they're not getting rid of everything.
Right.
But as Protestants, we ought to intend to focus on the scriptures and the word and the Bible.
Yeah.
And so it kind of brings both of those together. And really, you know, thinking of the Diaspora Network as helping raise immigrant church leaders, the fact that most converts are coming through other Latinos in, you know, among Latinos, that means that there's a work that's already happening. It's just up to us whether or not we want to join it or we want to get stuck in the past, because that's where the future is going.
Compelling.
I heard I was at this diaspora consultation in South Africa last year with diaspora leaders from around the world, and one of them shared, and would love with Misael and some others to dig into some of this data if we can show this numerically, but that in U.S. last Sunday, there were more people worshiping in Spanish than in English. And whether that we've reached that or we will reach that soon, that is kind of a picture that the future of the church in the U.S., whether Catholic or Protestant, is Latino. And we shared also one of the statistics was that 60% of the church in London now is Black diaspora. So 60% of those attending church on Sundays come from a Black diaspora background, and that Christianity in the West is really being revitalized through Nigerians and through other diaspora groups. And so in that sense, to me, I think what we've seen in the global church, we all know the global church is now majority global South, Latino, African, Asian. Those same dynamics we're now seeing present and becoming the case in the U.S. as migration has brought the world here. And so for me, like Professor Obi and Misael and others really represent what is not actually a minority of the church, but really is becoming the center of gravity of the church in the U.S. And I feel like as C4SO, this is of utmost importance for us to step into this work of God.
Well, that kind of leads me into my next question for you, Jonathan. Just to get, now that we've kind of heard a little background and heard some of the specifics about, you know, diaspora in general, like what's the vision for this network, the diaspora network, and why do you feel it's, I mean, you've articulated a bit of why you feel it's needed now, but talk a bit more about the network and what you hope to accomplish and see happen.
I feel like this is how God is on the move. One of the principal ways that God is working really in the church around the world, as we see the greatest movement of peoples in history right now through both refugees and immigrants and and so forth. And so kind of we're asking is how do we really join what God's doing and kind of like Misael said, not be left behind to some degree. And so it's almost like we're trying to put a sail here to this wind that's blowing. And so I think initially we're trying to support what God's already doing also in C4SO in the immigrant community. And so congregations like Igbo Anglican that have been around for 8 years now, Misión San Lucas is a Spanish-speaking Latino congregation, C4SO in Kansas City. So we really want to come around and support, encourage them, and just listen and learn and receive the gifts that they bring to our diocese. But then also, how do we equip and encourage a new generation of diaspora leaders as well? So we're praying through what it might look like to potentially, you know, also help plant some new churches, but really beginning with kind of listening, learning, and partnering with what is existing right now.
That's great. Well, I know you guys are hosting a launch conference October 7th and 8th at Church of the Cross. Tell us a bit about that conference. Who's it for and kind of what are you guys going to get up to?
We are gathering October 7th and 8th here in Austin. And our first kind of audience is we're hoping to gather first and second generation immigrant and diaspora leaders from around the diocese. Mm. And this would be really an event that is multicultural, multilingual, and is representative of those cultures. And so it'll be fully bilingual in English and Spanish, but we'll also have Igbo and begin with a worship night that is gathering immigrant churches from different groups here in Austin. But we're also hoping to bring key diocesan leaders and rectors and churches that would like to learn how to connect with and partner with diaspora in their neighborhoods and communities. And so C4SO churches, you know, as you kind of look on the map where they're located, cities like Atlanta or San Jose or LA or Austin or Dallas, even smaller cities, all of these cities have significant diaspora communities. And so how do we help churches also connect, partner with, reach out to those communities in their neighborhoods?
Okay. Well, very good. There'll be a link to that in the show notes, which you can find at c4so.org/podcast. Maybe we can return to Dr. Obi for a final question. As you think about, which I just learned, you don't pronounce the G. It's not Igbo. So I apologize for mispronouncing it, but it's Igbo. How can we pray? I know you guys are looking for a new rector right now. How can we pray for Igbo Anglican Church right now?
Not just Igbo Anglican Church. This is like a general need, even though our own appears to be more specific as we look at it. Our needs are just like every other immigrant need that you go about, you see all over this country. We are very similar so many ways. So our needs are very alike. As you mentioned, our immediate need now is the rector, which we are progressing well in that. We have identified somebody that we may hire eventually.
Okay.
We are about to go into another phase of the church, which is to file for nonprofit status. Some people call it a 501c, but there's a process of doing that. First of all, we have to do our incorporation, which the vestry is working on right now. And then we'll get into the hiring process and so forth. There are some hitches along the way. So that's why I keep asking Reverend Kainberg to keep us in your prayers, because there are so many hitches, just like some of you here. The churches that your father founded, Michelle, I'm sure your father will share some experiences with you. Sometimes there are issues. For example, we need a permanent facility. For example, so you find this everywhere you go. There's economic side of it. Most immigrants need financial help in one way or the other, whether for their churches or for their families or for their groups, for survival. We need people to stand in the gap for us. And the person who can do it best is our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. But we know he has people working for him all over the world in terms of people who can speak for us when we don't have a voice. Whether in the local level or in the national level. Eventually, our friend Reverend Jonathan Kenberg will come to find out that these are some of the hitches we'll get along the way as you try to make this organization a national one. It's not just a local issue. And the list of things here. Our country is a major concern for all of us immigrants, Nigerian immigrants. Our country, we are praying a lot for Nigeria to become a godly nation, because right now, like some of you, we are dealing with an issue of corruption and that sort of thing. I mean, a heavy corruption is literally destroying our country, even though we are supposed to be a Christian nation. We need to have breakthroughs in that country. and in this country also, in so many areas. We need breakthroughs in working together with one another. Immigrants need to understand that they are brothers and sisters, that they should work together. Just like people in the Acts of the Apostles, what they went through, sometimes there were misunderstandings, sometimes there were things went well. We need such breakthroughs, spiritual breakthroughs. We need miracles. This is an era of time that when we need miracles to really move mountains in our lives. So there's a lot of work to do in this.
Yeah. Well, thank you for sharing that with us, Dr. Obi, about those needs. Jonathan and Ms. Ayel, anything else to just share? How would you like for the diocese to be praying for y'all and for this network as we go forward?
Yeah, I just want to add that the search for a permanent building is not just an immigrant church need either. if you keep Church of the Resurrection in Los Angeles in your prayers to that end, mm-hmm. Just some procedural things we're going through with that. We'd love your prayers there.
Yeah.
And also, as always, I think it's important that we pray that God would give us eyes to see those people, to mm-hmm. see those, you know, on the margins, or, you know, people who are disconnected, who really need a friend or need someone to walk alongside them or to help welcome them to this country. Mm-hmm. So always be praying that we could see them and have the eyes to see.
Okay. Anything to add, Jonathan?
Yeah, I think, as we launch in October, and really seek to help kind of deepen this bridge between C4SO and immigrant diaspora communities, I think there's always a prayer for God to raise up leaders like Dr. Obi, like mm-hmm. Misael, and others that are leaders both within their own communities, but that can also bridge into the broader church. And so, yeah, praying for, I think, particularly first and second generation leaders throughout C4SO from Indian communities, from Nigerian, from Latino, from Korea and Chinese, that can both help encourage and build up their own communities, but also bridge in and share the gifts that they bring into the broader family mm-hmm. of C4SO.
Okay. Well, I appreciate you all spending some time with us today and with our listeners, kind of given the lay of the land for this new network. Listeners, if you would like to check out, I've got a lot of links in the show notes this time. Again, that's c4so.org/podcast. There's a link to the network website. There's a link to the information about the launch conference on October 7th and 8th. There's a letter from Bishop Todd, who wrote it earlier this year, about the network. There's a video that introduces the network, and there's an article on the C4SO blog about the Diaspora Network. Lots of good information, lots of good stuff for everybody to check out. Thanks again, y'all, for joining us today.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the C4SO podcast. We hope you enjoyed our conversation. Email us your thoughts and suggestions at connect@c4so.org.